is negative as can be, and she's weak emotionally. But she kissed me, and she put it there. She's got a chip on her shoulder blade, and her attitude makes me afraid. But she kissed me, and she put it there. Oh, she kissed me.
This is Jamie Dukes with NFL Network.
Yes, good to be on. Appreciate you having me. It's my first time
Falcons
with Skype.
Fan, so I love you. So I'm really excited. Well, I wanted to start out by talking a little bit about your foundation, because I heard an interesting fact the other day.
Okay.
They said that back in 1970, there was one player that weighed 300 pounds or more.
Right.
Last year, as training camp started, there were 532 players that weighed over 300 pounds.
Well, the thing is, the game has evolved and the game has changed. And I think that's what we have to look at, you know, with everything. And part of that has to do with, you think about it, just common sense is, look at what we're putting in our poultry. Chickens, the steroids, and, you know, because we're growing things faster. And as all things, it's bigger and it's better. There is definitely what I consider an epidemic in the National Football League as far as obesity is concerned, just from the standpoint, it's not with the current players, it's with the retired players.
Right.
My story has to do with the fact that, you know, here I struggled with obesity in post-retirement. I've had seven teammates and counting right now who have died from what we call the diseases of excess weight, type 2 diabetes, heart disease, so on and so forth, the comorbidities. Reggie
17.
White died. Yeah. Reggie White died from complications of sleep apnea. Well, the reality was Reggie was 100 pounds or so overweight,
right.
And because of that, that led to his death. So that's why my wife and I, Angela, we founded the Put Up Your Dukes Foundation, and our whole mission is to kind of help players and also help other people in general understand the issues that are going on with the diseases of excess weight.
How hard is it to modify your diet after you retire? Like, if you're used to eating a certain way.
That's it. And that's the problem. That's exactly the problem, because I tell people, you know, all the time, think of it this way. If I asked you to live on 60% of the oxygen that you normally live on every day,
right,
your body's going to have a reaction. Well, effectively, that's what's happening. You know, as offensive linemen or football players, in a lot of cases, we were trained to gorge large amounts of food to maintain our body mass. In post-retirement, now all of a sudden you don't have the 6 or 8 hours to, you know, be able to change your diet and things of that nature. The 6 or 8 hours to work out that you normally would have. So now your wife's telling you to get the kids, pick them up from school, and while you're at it, take them home. So that's what changes, but your eating habits don't.
I hear some guys say that after they retire, they just stop working out altogether. I mean, like, not even half an hour in the treadmill.
Yeah, but a lot of times, think about it. If you've done... Like, for example, I did just kind of a rough guesstimate. I've lifted over 2+ million pounds in my life. When you think about all the weight training that I've done, stacking it up day in and day out. And truthfully, you just get tired when that's all you've done is train. Sometimes people hit a wall and they get tired. It's unfortunate, but that's the reality of, you know, just the immense pressure that we're under to train and be at the top level.
Well, when you retire and you're not working out as much, or maybe not working out at all, are you still hungry? Are you just sort of used to?
You know, I mean, that part of it doesn't change because you've developed those habits. You know, going back to the analogy about the oxygen, you're going to crave the oxygen. If you're down all of a sudden now only using 60% of oxygen, your body is going to ask for the normal dosage that it's been getting all of your life.
But do you think that while guys are playing, and maybe this just depends on the guy, but is it hard to eat good calories and still get your weight up You know what I mean? Because, like, it's easier to eat, like, let's say burgers and stuff like that because it's higher calorie and you can eat. But, like, let's say good fats and calories. Like, is it hard to have a healthy diet and still gain weight?
Well, no, it's not. I mean, because the reality is it's all about calories that your caloric intake, period. So, in other words, if you're consuming at large levels, and with this day and age, players are more in tune to their bodies because of what we know about burgers as opposed to this, that, and the other. But still, the quantity is the quantity, and your body is craving the quantity. So I don't think it's as much, or haven't looked nearly as much at about the good ones as opposed to the bad ones. The reality is your body is craving these calories. And for me, you know, one of the best things that happened to me was I have had bariatric surgery. Because everything I tried, the South Beach diet, Fort Lauderdale diet, the I-4 diet, Orlando to Daytona diet, I mean, you name it, I did them all.
And nothing
worked because my consumption levels were so high. And I was still working out, you know, running, you know, 4 or 5 miles a day, 5 days a week. But because I wasn't training at the levels that I was training before, incrementally, my weight just continued to go up and up and up. And so I found myself a biscuit over 400 pounds. So I needed to find the right tool that would help me. And so for me, it was the Realize band. And effectively, the way my band works is it basically took my stomach from the size of a football to the size of a golf ball. So the band, because of the clotting action, you know, and you can look at realizeband.com to find more information about that if that's what you're looking for. But effectively, what it did was I got that sensation in my brain because of the clotting action of the band that I was full. And that's what allowed me to lose the weight. And so what I always tell people is I'm not advocating, you know, surgery for everybody, but I'm saying if what you're doing is not working and you're morbidly obese, I got seven teammates to tell you, chances are you're going to have some kind of event that's not good. And I say seven teammates because I know probably 30 or 40 guys who died just recently. Orlando Brown, Zeus, many of you remember him, the guy who got hit with the pellet, the referee's pellet, and threw it in and hit him in his eye. He just died of complications from diabetes, but Zeus was over 400 pounds. Ken Hall, the center for the Buffalo Bills, just dropped last week, you know, who was on all of those Bills teams with Jim Kelly and that crew. So it continues to happen all over the place in players that you know, and the reality is it's generally heart-related or excess weight-related issues.
So what does your foundation do? How does it help the players?
Well, what we do, it's not just the players. Well, we, from the player perspective, we serve as an advocate. For example, we were able to advocate on behalf of players to add bariatric solutions to the menu of services for retired players, as for example, you know, they would replace your hips and joints, you know, because they know what the toll that it took on your body. But truthfully, they had no idea that, you know, and the good thing about it was players got a chance to see me kind of melt away right on television. So they got, and so they started sending me emails asking me, you know, or calling saying, what did you do? And that's when I told them. And so they're presenting with the same problems of whether I'm getting my knees replaced or my hips replaced, or maybe if I lost some weight, 50 pounds,
right,
I wouldn't have to have the procedure.
Right.
So that's kind of how that happened. So we've been working with Johnson & Johnson and the Player Care Foundation to, you know, kind of help add these services. And again, it wasn't because the NFL didn't want to do it. It's because, truthfully, that just wasn't something that they were looking at. And so for us bringing that to the attention, because, you know, you have the concussion issues that everybody's worrying about. But the reality is, I don't know anybody who's died from the concussion issue. Some would, you know, but I know a lot of guys who are dying from this weight issue. So that's kind of what we do from that perspective.
Okay, that makes sense. Because, I mean, the boom and the increase in guys who are bigger in the NFL really did happen kind of quickly. I mean, like in a span of maybe like 20 years, which sounds like a long time, but it really isn't.
And the thing is, everything evolves. That's why I kind of started this thing. That's what was supposed to happen. The game is supposed to evolve. The biggest, the best, the strongest. That's why the NFL is the most exciting brand of football in the world, because it presents these gladiators, these mammoth gladiators with these super fast guys, you know, and all of these things come together, just going back to what they used to do in Rome.
Yeah.
So, you know, this is the modern day version of what happens in the gladiator scenario.
Yeah, and guys just keep getting bigger and faster together. Like when I see somebody like Mario Williams, so I think as well, like 285, and he is so super fast.
Yep.
For linemen or for everybody, how much bigger can people get? Like, do you think it's going to stop now, or what do you think?
I don't think it'll stop. I think it will continue to evolve. I don't know how far, because they thought before it wouldn't get bigger. I think it's to continue to see. But keep in mind, these are the residual effects, in my opinion, and I'm not a doctor. These are the residual effects from what is happening with the foods that we're eating, the things that are being placed in the food. And I'm not saying it's a bad thing. I love my fried chicken. Okay, I love my chicken.
I was going to ask you, do you still eat
meat? I'm not saying that at all. Give me a big old pot. Okay.
Well, I wasn't going to take it from you.
That being said, excuse my phone ringing here. That being said, the key here is that because of the residual results of those things being added to our food, I think we'll continue to see some level of people getting bigger and bigger, stronger and faster, that kind of thing.
Yeah. I have an offensive lineman here. I have to talk to you a little bit about what's going on with offensive lines in the NFL. And one of the most difficult things, especially when I'm blogging, when I'm trying to judge how well an offensive line is doing, whether it's pass protection or run blocking or whatever, I feel like I run into a lot of difficulty telling how much is their responsibility and how much is on, you know, the player they're trying to protect or trying to block for. Now, you know, Chris Johnson is having an abysmal season so far, and he got frustrated, I guess, about a week ago, and he said, well, you know, it's the line, basically, saying that they're not doing their job. So help us, first of all, if you want to give your comments on what you think is going on with Chris Johnson, I definitely welcome that. But also, well, let me know, how do we judge offensive lines and how well they're doing?
Well, there's several things that are going on with Chris Johnson's situation. And the first thing that comes to mind is here you have a situation where you have a guy who came in late. Now, this is a new offense that Chris is learning, which means there are new schemes. And we also have a lockout situation. So he wasn't there for training camp. And now you have a different kind of scheme that he's running in. So there are going to be problems there. I think there's value in his argument, even though I don't think he should be saying it, but I guess he's feeling pressure because everybody's on about the contract, and you know how they like, you know, the haterade is flying around, so you understand that when you get paid, you got to play. But if you look at where he's getting tackled, 60% of the time he's getting tackled in the backfield.
Yeah, he's getting stuffed. There's stuff,
not just stuff. In the backfield, somebody popping through and hitting Chris Johnson. Right. So there is a measure of blame that certainly goes there. Right. But the other part of it is again, goes back to this offense. And I know the guy ran for 2,000 yards. Yeah. And if I'm the coach, I'm finding what he did and the schemes that they used when he ran for the 2,000 yards.
Right.
That's what I'm going to do. I can't say that that's exactly what is happening in Tennessee. But those are the kind of commitments, and that's the kind of research that I would do.
Right.
The formation, I mean, I would go back to whatever they were doing, that's what I would do. And I can't
say these teams are saying straight out and out that when they, like Ray Lewis, when the Ravens played the Titans, Ray said, we didn't look at anybody but Chris Johnson. We studied
that's
Chris
correct.
Johnson all week.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. And how they're blocking and protecting for Chris Johnson. That's also vitally important. So there's some disconnect there. To me, it's understandable to a certain extent. Why? Because he wasn't there. New offense. You got to learn the offense. You got to learn the subtleties of the offense. And so when you put all of those things together, it does make sense to me why he's struggling some. But I did expect to see more explosion plays out of him. But I think they could collectively take the blame for what's going on.
Okay. So talk to me a little bit about how we assign blame. you assign
blame based on, in your head, number one, let's talk about, okay, the running game. Pick up right where we left off with Chris Johnson.
Okay.
If guys are popping through the line, hitting the running back before he gets to the line of scrimmage, that's easy. There's line issues there.
Right.
You take Michael Vick or some of the quarterbacks that are out there, is that when he plants his back foot, he's having to make some kind of adjustment as soon as he plants that back foot as opposed to looking downfield. You can assess blame from that perspective. You get a guy back to, like, for example, Big Ben does this quite often. Big Ben will pat that ball. He'll sit back there and hold that thing. And so sometimes the blame goes to him. Aaron Rodgers early on was holding on to the ball too long. And so a lot of the sacks, or you could blame half the sacks that were happening for the Green Bay Packers on Aaron Rodgers and part on the offensive line. But now Aaron is getting that ball out, and all of a sudden his sacks have been coming down. When you look at that situation, that's how you best judge how well a team is doing. I mean, the eye test kind of tells it all. If it's a jailbreak real quick,
blame
the line. Or the back, for that matter, who didn't pick up a blitz. But if you're seeing the quarterback be able to drop back, take first option, second option, third option, that ball's supposed to be out. Anything that happens, that's on him.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that makes sense. So before I let you go, I wanted you to talk a little bit about Reggie White.
Yeah.
I just finally caught the Football Life documentary about his friendship with Jerome Brown, and of course, just touched my heart. It was such a good. Are you still in touch with his wife at all?
No, I have talked to Sarah in a number of years, but Reggie was really one of the prime catalysts for us launching, you know, what we were doing with the Put Up Your Dukes Foundation. And ultimately, I'm going to get with Sarah on some things as we start going into some other markets to roll this plan out. But to talk about the piece, you know, it's funny is I actually forgot, you know, as you get a little seasoned, these things will happen. It'll happen to you. Don't worry about it. You know, just I forgot some of those things. So it brought back so many vivid memories. And, you know, one of the things that you know, kind of brought back to remembrance for me is that when JB would come through Atlanta, you know, we were thick as thieves. And we played against each other in college. So I played against him 3 times in college. He was an All-American.
Wow, okay.
I was an All-American. We were very, very good friends. And so when it happened, the thing about JB was he was just wild, you know, just a gregarious person, but he was a wild side kind of guy, that John Dean type that lived life really fast. You know, they tell stories about, you know, how, you know, because he loved speed. I mean, he loved cars, fast cars. That was his vice. And so it was, you know, fitting to a certain extent that that's what really kind of, you know, it was the speed that actually killed him when it was all said and done down there in Brooksville. But he was a great guy, a fun guy to be around, had a great heart, and it was just really sad. And
enjoyed those clips from him joking around. And
And the thing about it is, you know, we all were kind of thick as thieves. And now Reggie was a total different situation because I played with Reggie in Green Bay. And we had known each other over the years, but we really got a chance to, you know, kind of, you know, bond, so to speak, through our relationship being teammates with the Green Bay Packers. And, you know, the thing about Reggie was the first thing that comes to mind is conviction. Everything he did, or passion. He was passionate about everything he did. Everything that he was about helping people. It was about making a difference. And it's unfortunate. Sometimes people don't understand your passion. And sometimes Reggie was never kind of a politically correct kind of a person. He had his values and he stood on his values no matter what. And if people didn't like it, he didn't care. And I think that, for example, you know, what happened when he spoke at the legislature in Green Bay, I think that got blown out of proportion. It was opening that window up for those folks who, you know, were looking to get that gotcha. It opened that window when he meant no harm. His speech was out of love. Everything he did was out of love.
And see, but you don't get that part. And especially with the media has changed now so that, like, you know, there's not really a whole lot of excuse for people to not get a full sense of someone who is pretty famous. But back then, and I was very young at that time, but I didn't even get, this is what I loved about the Football Life documentary, is that I didn't get the nurturing part of him. Like, I got the passion part. I got, you know, I got the good heart, the good person part, but I didn't get how concerned he was about other people, that this was just coming from that kind of place. So I appreciated that. And I agree with what you're saying, that, like, it was the sort of gotcha thing. It was taking advantage of the fact that people maybe didn't understand him as a complete person at all.
Yeah. That's where we are in this day and age. Yeah. I mean, that's unfortunate. That's where we are. Is it's, you know, with the internet and the things there, you know, unfortunately, some people don't understand, you know, what integrity is, and they're more concerned about breaking a story and twisting and manipulating a story so that they can, you know, get their, you know, the fantasy on, so to speak. So that's kind of where we are today.
Well, my last question is, what's it like being part of that fraternity of such a great time in football? I mean, I feel like I always say, like, you know, basketball is a sport, tennis is a sport, football is a religion. That's my little that's my little saying. But so I guess all years of football really are great. But you played during a really great time.
Well, you know, funny thing is, like, some would say that you, like, you go back to the North Dallas 40 days when it was really wild, the wild west, and you didn't have the media. you know, I was at the very, we kind of were at the very beginning of this media explosion that we have now. But I think that I was in the era of arguably the best athletes.
Yeah.
You look at the prime time, Deion Sanders, when you look at kind of athletes, the quarterback play across the board, you know, as well. And I don't mean to take anything from Aaron Rodgers as well as he's playing. The reality is nobody can cover. That's a problem. Nobody can cover. Corner position or at safety. So because of all the problems that you have there, it just leaves itself. I mean, the league is just in a different place. And so while you're seeing more offensive numbers and more production come out of people, the great Warren Sapp, come over here for a second, Warren.
Yes,
we're
sir.
Blogging. Just blog here. And this is
oh,
the great.
Oh, look, I get a 2-for-1.
2-for-1.
2-for-1. As I go, right as here. I go.
I was
telling them, they cuss me out every Saturday at Twitter, be like, why you hate the 4? And I'm like, that's Jamie Dukes. That's not Warren Sapp. I know it's not looking like, but it's not the same guy.
So I don't know if I can handle both of y'all, so I'm glad he
Well, Warren's a lot lighter on his feet than I am.
A little bit.
But I'm much younger looking, though.
Okay. I love that. Well, thank you so much.
You're quite welcome.
I appreciate it. This was fun.
Sure. Good. Anytime.